This is the Star Wars Report's continuing coverage of DragonCon 2012.
We're here with Mr. Richard Hatch. Welcome to DragonCon. Of course, I should be saying that. This is my first year.
Well, you're doing a good job. Sounds like you know what you're doing.
So say we all.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report, our continuing coverage of Dragon Con. You hear it in the background, our Lord of the Rings edition. I'm so glad that you decided to tune in. I'm Riley Blanton, one of your hosts for this evening, and I am super excited about this podcast episode. Possibly, dare I say, the most excited I've ever been about a podcast that we've ever released. And I'm looking right at her now, bringing her in now to the Star Wars Report. Bethany Blanton, welcome. We just can't decide, can we? The Battlestar quotes in the intro, and then we've got the Lord of the Rings edition on the Star Wars Report. But this is a special, special episode. We've got folks listening into the podcast feed. We've got folks listening in live right now. Hello. Hey there.
Hi.
Welcome now to the show. On Middle-earth Network Radio for our special Hobbit Day celebration. We're so glad that you guys have decided to tune in. And so what are these crazy Star Wars people doing? Well, I'm glad you asked. Well, thank you for asking. What we're doing today is releasing our Tolkien-centric content from our DragonCon coverage. So you guys listening on the radio station, listening over at Middle-earth Network and HobbitDay.com, you guys should head over to our website, cheap plug, StarWarsReport.com, and find our podcast feeds. You can also find us on iTunes and download away like a crazy person our DragonCon coverage, because if you're a sci-fi or fantasy fan at all, you should definitely do that. So I have the cheap plugs out of the way. We've got some fantastic stuff, and I am serious when I say I think the best interview we've ever done and one of the hardest interviews we've ever gotten are today, as well as some highlights from Tolkien. So I'm teasing too much. Coming up on this episode, we've got an interview with Billy Boyd, the one and only Pippin Peregrin Took from Lord of the Rings. He sings.
Yes, he does.
Billy Boyd sings. Enough said. And we also have Craig Parker, who played Haldir from Lord of the Rings, of course, Fellowship of the Two Towers, before he was... Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert, killed in action.
Yep.
Not that he's bitter about it at all.
I know. Indeed. And I will point out, again, check out our DragonCon coverage, because though we are a Star Wars podcast, we did cover it in the light of trying to get some really great coverage of the whole convention.
Yes,
also
indeed.
And Middle Earth Network Radio, so that you guys could listen to it.
Exactly. Exactamente.
Yeah, I apologize if my voice sounds funny. I'm still kind of sick. So.
But you are a trooper, Bethany, and we're continuing a tradition that we really shouldn't be. And that is the tradition we established at both Star Wars Celebration and Dragon Con of recording podcasts after midnight.
Yes, or in this case, actually after 1 a.m.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
I told them.
Oh, no. But coming up right now, we have highlights from one of the panels that was at Dragon Con, a Lord of the Rings panel. A hobbit, a wizard, a dwarf. Oh my.
And an elf.
Well, in this case, it was actually a hobbit, an elf, and a dwarf. Oh my. The wonderful Sylvester McCoy was not on this panel. But.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you what. John Rhys-Davies, who played Gimli, has some fantastic insight into life. See, I could listen to him just talk for a whole hour. But he talks about his film career and tells some very entertaining and funny stories. Really put a A-plus effort into the panel, which a lot of times panelists don't. And they just kind of show up and they answer all the same fan questions they've always gotten. But there's some great non-Lord of the Rings stuff, but also some great Lord of the Rings stuff. Some inside perspective of Pippin and what it was like being one of the hobbits. And Craig Parker, who turns out is quite the comedian when he wants to be.
Well, he was a stand-up comedian.
He was now.
Yes, he was.
You have his Wikipedia page up, don't you?
No, I don't.
See,
he
I'm just being
the,
shown up.
Only interview I actually prepared for at Dragon Con.
Actually,
see, we went into Dragon Con so exhausted from doing another convention less than a week before that we were so tired, very little time to prepare.
Yep.
And we did most of our interviews just cold. Look, it's so and so. Why don't we interview them? And then we
you
go through
cold.
All the trouble of setting it up. And
yeah.
Well, we are rather large Lord of the Rings fans. And,
oh, I was gonna say, we're what? Okay, Lord of the Rings fans. Gotcha. Yeah.
So we know a good bit about some of the stuff going into it.
Yes.
But by interviewing cold, what I mean is no preparation done beforehand, but a lot of organization and basically work to get the actual interview.
And I would be remiss right now if I didn't say, because they were just doing the one opening. It's late. We were going to do the fancy smanchy, the super duper smash cuts. But for you Tolkien fans, I'm sure you're sick of hearing us talk if you haven't already fast forwarded to the good part. I do want to thank the Dragon Con staff specifically for Billy Boyd, because his line was packed the whole weekend. And
it, basically, he's really busy.
Two
just
awesome,
the whole time.
Absolutely awesome staffers helped us work with Billy and his agent to get us a couple minutes with him right before he left on, I believe it was Saturday. No, it was Sunday night, day three. And, you know, right before he left, we caught him at the convention hall.
We didn't catch him. We spent two days setting this up specific time.
And by catch him, I mean
where we got time to actually, in private, you can hear the crowds in the distance, but in private.
Yeah. Relative privacy. Yeah.
Interview.
It's better than than huge crowds when you try to interview someone. But yeah, suffice it to say, I do want to just a huge thank you to the staff over at Dragon Con. We're all volunteer, by the way. So if you want to hear about our experience in great detail, we did daily podcast episodes. I believe that I'm very pleased with it. It's kind of raw for podcasting, but that's kind of what makes it fun. It's just Beth and I sitting down in random locations around downtown Atlanta talking about the awesome and epic convention that is Dragon Con 2012. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let me present to you the Lord of the Rings panel at Dragon Con and our continuing coverage of Dragon Con 2012. Did I say Dragon Con? Did I mention it was Dragon Con? We also did interviews.
Dragon Con of the Dragon, double complete dragon.
Dragon.
And if you get that inside joke,
oh my goodness, there might be this one person who gets
you.
That joke.
Yes.
All right, and without further ado, it's our continuing coverage, the panel, and our interviews coming up right after this. Happy Hobbit Day, by the way. And remember, the spirit of the Eldar will be with you. Always.
None other than Mr. Billy Boyd. And finally, dressed to the nines, Mr. John Ray Stevens. We've been talking and thinking a little bit about fame and how that's, you know, kind of different. So I wanted John to start with you. When's the first kind of moment or instance or situation where you remember being recognized and really feeling like, whoa, people are aware of me in a whole new way?
I'll tell you what real fame is, right? You're standing in the line to get a ticket from Delta because you want to go to Colorado Springs or something like that, and you're in LA. And it's a long, slow line, and the guy who's selling the tickets is very full of himself. And you get there, and he goes, "No, don't tell me, don't tell me, no, don't tell me your name. Don't, no, don't tell me, don't tell me. It's right there, it's right there. There's a line of people behind you. Begin to stir, say, no. You were in that, you were in that awful monkey picture, didn't you?" that was complete crap. I mean, why did you do a film like that? It's complete crap, you know. I mean, I suppose it must be the money, really, mustn't it? You know, I mean, when you think about it, a guy like you probably earns nearly as much as the real stars. But by now, you're ears are red. You are the height of Gimli, and you have the temper of Gimli. And you leaned forward and said, "Give me a bloody ticket to Colorado Springs now." Curious if you had a good idea or a good feeling before Raiders, before other projects. Can you smell when you're on a project like Rings that you just know is going to be a big success? Can you feel that when you're doing the work? They all look perplexed.
Well, yes, you do. But you have to have been on some big ones beforehand. Often you'll find you learn more from disastrous productions than you actually do from great ones. The great ones just go so smoothly sometimes. I went to New Zealand not believing this funny little man called Jackson had the slightest idea of what he was letting himself into. And within 2 weeks, I was convinced that he'd built an entire film industry to service this film. I watched him handling his crew. I watched him handling his actors. And you probably remember that press meeting we had, an early press thing.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the New Zealand press is there, and you know, they're all, you know, pretty wise guys, you know. And I thought I would make an idiot of myself because actually I knew what I was talking about. So I got up and said, "Gentlemen, you have no idea quite what is happening. Three predictions. One, these films are going to be amongst the greatest grossing pictures of all time. Two, these pictures are going to be bigger than Star Wars." Now, they were just starting to shoot the new Star Wars in New Zealand, you know. At that point, when I said bigger than Star Wars, I saw Peter Jackson bury his mouth.
I do.
And three, I said, in 20 years' time, when you look back on the great films of your lifetime, Lord of the Rings is going to be there. And I said, revise your expectations upwards. And I took a terrible caning in the local press. You know? I was the imbecile who said, you know, Lord of the Rings is going to be bigger than Star Wars. About 18 months later, PJ came up to me and he said, "John, you remember when you said that?" I said, "Yes, I saw your reaction too." And he said, "You might be pleased to know that as of today, we have just outgrossed Star Wars."
Some people in the history of the world. A chap that I don't know enough about, but would love to know more about and would love to play him, is a man called Solon the Lawgiver in ancient Athens. All I know about him is that he was a pretty smart guy, and the Athenians wanted a constitution. And they said, "Solon, you give us the constitution." And he said, "Fine, I will draw the Constitution of Athens for you. But here's the thing. Every one of you must do as I say for 10 years. You must not change a bit of the Constitution." And they said, "Oh, I don't know." And he said, "That's the condition. And I, once I have written the Constitution, will go away for 10 years. And that's what he did. And he's called Solon the Lawgiver, but he's also Solon the Wise. Because we left a position of really almost supreme power. Incidentally, Hesiod says that he went off
And he walked and journeyed right across Asia Minor. He met up with King Croesus, you know, who was, you know, as rich as Croesus. Croesus was so wealthy that he made some great sort of like flower vases, but they were votive offerings for the temple of Delphi. They were made of solid gold, but they were as tall as a man and as wide. His wealth was legendary. And Croesus said, look, I want you to come here and be my advisor. And Solon said, no. He also said, and this is the very thing, Croesus said, do you not think that I am the happiest man in the world? And Solon said, if you be dead, call no man happy. I'd love to play. I think he's fascinating. I'd like to know more about him.
Batman.
I have to tell you, my favorite line in the entire shoot was, "Cut, it's a wrap." But but there was an awful moment when I had to speak Dwarvish. The sentence is, "Ish kakwi, I do rog nol." Now, doesn't that sound simple? I mean, any one of you can do it. You remember that.
Just get back to me.
Okay, I'll do it again. Hang on. Eat. Shh. Hang on, no, I got it. I'll get it. Ish go. Ah! Blast! Every single one of them knew how to say the line, and there I would be 15 minutes later going, "Ish go. Oh, what the hell is this bloody line?"
That he didn't say just blast.
And there are a few other dwarven aspects. In my memory, you were on your knees when you were.
The sea.
I'm ready.
I feel like I shouldn't say anything now. No, I don't. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to Peregrine Took himself.
Hello.
Billy Boyd. How are you doing, Billy?
I'm doing good.
Billy, my name's Riley, and this is my sister Bethany.
Hi, Riley and Bethany.
Thank you for giving us a couple minutes of your time. I know you've got to be exhausted. This is towards the end of Dragon Con, and you've been busy, I'll tell you what.
Do you know what? I thought I'd be more tired. I think because it's the end, I feel exhilarated with a new burst of energy. I'm ready
good.
To sign another 3 days and do question and answers.
You should be careful what you wish for, because I know the fans would probably appreciate it.
That's been great fun.
Have you been to Dragon Con before?
Never, no.
So I've got to ask, what are your impressions? How have people been good to you?
Yeah, I think it's a really special thing. The energy from the first day, you know. I woke up really early and I was downstairs looking for a coffee at, you know, 6 a.m. And everybody was setting up stuff. And it's just a real good fan convention.
Yeah.
You know? It just seems like everybody's having a great time. I loved it.
They are, and we are too. But I'll start my first question specifically on Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
My first experience was Lord of the Rings was seeing The Fellowship on television a few years after it was in theaters.
Ah.
And it was a small little scene where you and Dom Monaghan were playing around with some fireworks. And that was my first impression. And I loved the Hobbit culture. How did you and Dom and the rest of the famous four Hobbits approach the Hobbit culture and Peter Jackson as well?
I think we talked about it a lot. We used to go to Peter's house and with the script, and we'd talk about who the Hobbits were. And we came up with this thing that it was almost like they were human beings with all the kind of negativity and cynicism taken away. And that's why they were small, you know. there was a lot of goodness in them.
Yeah.
And they were about having fun and finding, you know, good food and good drink and smoking a pipe. And
yeah.
They don't want adventures. They're quite happy doing what they do, you know.
Sure, yeah.
So that was a big major thing. So the stuff with the fireworks, it's just because Merry and Pippin thought it'd be fun and they wanted to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They've watched the wizard setting off these fireworks and thought, God, that looks like fun. Let's try that ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all about that.
Now, I was wondering, we were in your panel earlier, and great job, by the way.
Thank you.
We love seeing you guys up there in the panel. And you spoke of the hardship sometimes of acting on a set where it's rain, it's freezing cold, you're in a costume, so you know you don't get a good heavy coat.
Yeah.
What was it like acting on a set that could sometimes be very strenuous at times and sometimes not so much?
I mean, there's all different things, you know, from especially on Lord of the Rings. I said the other day that it felt like we made, you know, lots of different films. Because if you think when we were doing the Ents, Treebeard, me and Dom, I can't even remember how long we were up that tree, but it was probably like a couple of months off and on.
Really?
You know? So that's a whole movie.
Yeah,
that
sure.
We did that up a tree, and then you'd finish that and you'd be up, you know, you'd be on a river somewhere, and then you'd be in Minas Tirith and night shoots, and then you'd be, you know, going to the top of a mountain. So it was all these different things. So, but winter with the hobbit feet was the worst for me. They used to take in all the water and your feet would be freezing and, you know, wet, cold all night. That was the worst.
Really?
Other than that, you know, it was all kind of fun.
I don't know how you guys stayed so determinedly cheerful, but you and Dom, but I'll tell you what, I do have a question. When you were approaching that kind of that hobbit culture, it seemed when you watch the behind the scenes, you guys could be kind of goofy but off the screen as well. What were some of the goofiest things you guys did? I'm just curious.
We did a lot of stuff. I mean, and that was sort of character based, you know. I think it's because we were the hobbits,
sure,
that kind of came off set as well. And I remember when we used to come on set, people were like, yeah, the hobbits are here, because, you know, there was a bit of fun, you know.
The party's arrived, yeah.
Exactly, because, you know, all the men and the elves would be having wars and we'd be out, you know, smoking a pipe or stealing a firework.
Longbottom leaf, yes.
Yeah, so we had to kind of keep that going. So we were the hobbits on set as well, you know. But, you know, to think of actual things that we did, there was a lot of stuff, you know. We put a dead fish in Sean Bean's car once. He didn't know where that smell was coming from for about a month. That was kind of funny.
Probably thought Andy Serkis's character had shown up.
Right, exactly, with that big fish.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. We know you're in a hurry, so I do have one quick question. I know you're an avid surfer, so I've got to ask you, if they lived close to the ocean, do you think hobbits would be surfers? That's my last question for you.
Well, probably not, because they don't like water.
This is true.
Hobbits don't like... There's only one family of hobbits, and I forget which one.
I know, and now I'm losing my Tolkien trivia card, because I've got to remember. I know. I'll have to link it up below.
And it's not the Tooks.
No. But I'll tell you what. I bet Merry and Pippin would be adventurous enough to do it.
Probably. And, you know, the Tooks are kind of the most adventurous of the hobbits. But I don't know if they'd want to surf, though.
Yeah. I did have a question relating to water. With your role as Master Commander, what was it like being on a ship?
It was brilliant. Somebody was talking, actually, about Helm's Deep and how they had to use rain towers. And when it was actually raining, they couldn't film, because rain doesn't look like rain on film. They had to wait for the rain to stop so they could put on the rain towers. And John was saying, and it was freezing cold and get down your back. And I remember the storm scene in Master and Commander. We filmed that on a big tank in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it rained on us for like 2 weeks from these huge rain towers. And they had a jet engine to blow the wind. And they had dump tanks that would dump 5 tons of water onto a ship at the same time. Huge.
Wow.
But after about 2 weeks, somebody noticed, where's this water coming from? And they're like, the tank? And all the supporting cast had been peeing in the tank for about a month
that.
So they had to drain the tank, and then we had to start again.
Well, only in the film industry.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what. Well, thank you so much, Billy. We really appreciate you giving us a couple minutes. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Really nice. Hi, I'm Billy Boyd, and I played Pippin in Lord of the Rings, and you're listening to the Star Wars Report on Middle-earth Network Radio.
today, and we're talking to a gentleman who has been as patient as we have been persistent, and that is saying something. Welcome back to our continuing Dragon Con coverage. We're talking with the one and only Craig Parker. You guys probably know him as Haldir, or more recently as the ingenious and maybe somewhat evil Gaius Claudius Glaber. What's thank you for evil? Giving us...
My pleasure. It's lovely to be here. I'm sorry to keep running away from you.
No. I understand, because this is... I'll tell you what, Dragon Con is a crazy convention, and that's the big thing. When we talk to some of you guys stay so busy, and what's that like? I'm just curious, just having the fans come up. Does it ever get old?
No, it's Dragon Con particularly is so wonderful. It's the most eccentric and creative of all the cons, I think. There's so much stimulus that you can't get tired here, because every time you look up, you see some new wonderful sight. And there's an amazing team who kind of hold it all together and manage to wrangle, 1,000 people.
Yes.
So someone comes up to you and tells you where you need to be and what you need to be doing, and you just obey, and it's works out remarkably.
So is this your first large convention of this kind?
No, I've done a few now, and this is my third time at Dragon Con. I came in 2004.
Okay.
And it's 2009, I think. So I'm old hand. I'm used to it. Nothing shocks me anymore.
Has it changed much over the years?
It's got bigger and bigger, and it's weird. I am pretty much unshockable in life, but there are moments here that I do stop and my jaw drops. It's kind of, I love that about it, that it's always unexpected.
Well, we're going to get to some career questions, but I have to ask, nowadays, who do you get more coming up to? Your role for talking about your role in Legend of the Seeker, or is it Spartacus these days, or is it still a lot of Lord of the Rings fans?
I'm a lot of the Lord of the Rings and Seeker. I sort of was in disguise with wigs.
Sure.
Things. So I kind of I can happily run around with sort of anonymity. In Spartacus, kind of looked the most like me, I suppose.
Yeah.
Normally, so that's been kind of interesting. But when it first started. And it was a lot of very sort of, I was living in London at the time when it first went to air, and you walk everywhere there. And I'd be walking home at night or going somewhere to meet friends, and huge guys across the other side of the road, you'd sort of be walking along and they'd kind of look and stare, and I think, oh God, I'm going to be mugged. Yeah. I'm going to have to fight. I'm useless at fighting. And these sort of giant boys would come up going, yeah, Spartacus, it's a good one, isn't it? And you sort of go, translating that was, hey, Spartacus, it's good. That's for the American listeners. So it was suddenly that cool thing of going, oh, I'm not going to be beaten up and die. They're kind of into it. But it's been great.
Speaking of American listeners, when we ran by your booth for the first day, just to say hi, I have to admit to the listeners, I did let out a y'all.
Y'all.
And, and we were at the panel later that day, and you had to ask the questions. It was Ewens versus y'all here in the South. And
I'm still slightly confused, but Ewens does exist, doesn't it?
It does. In fact, Bethy and I are originally from Tennessee, and so you'll find it a lot there.
Right.
Is where
Ewens is a large group of people, isn't it?
Yes. It's y'all is usually a smaller group, and Ewens is a very mountainous kind of. It's an Irish term.
Is that Ozark?
That evolved.
Yeah, that is. That's so, a ding. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a few minutes ago Spartacus, and I have to ask. I'm familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners may have seen some of the YouTube stuff that Spartacus has put out, and they did a great piece on some of what you guys do to physically prepare for the roles, because it's an extraordinarily physical
boot camp.
Yeah, the Spartacus boot camp,
which now Los Angeles is full of places advertising boot camp.
Yeah,
where people pay a lot of money to go and be tortured. I don't understand it.
Well, it seems like it's launched this almost fitness craze. The idea of doing really focused physical preparation over a short period of time. What was that like?
I play a general, so I managed to convince them I didn't need to do it. Because I'd heard the stories from the first season, and it's just monstrous. The stunt crew who organize it and run it and get the actors up to speed and strength are amazing, and they're all incredibly fit. And so for them, it's like, yeah, cool, we do it. But for actors, you sort of different levels of fitness, I suppose, and it's a huge challenge, but it's also brilliant. I think they realized that to maintain yourself physically through the entire show, because it's incredibly demanding, or any show is, even without the action, you just get exhausted, and they realized that the actors would break if they didn't get them not just looking good, but physically strong and fit, so everyone kind of had to do it, and we all I didn't do the boot camp, but you have to make sure you make the time to go and kind of keep yourself. Otherwise, you just break. And, you know, a broken actor is a really useless thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whinges a lot.
Physically, as an actor, how do you balance? I know sometimes when you're on a set, you're shooting constantly. You might be up at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly physically demanding career, I imagine,
There's
at times.
There's nothing glamorous about it. That's the great myth of being an actor. You say, I must be so glamorous. And you go, yeah, getting up at 3 in the morning and having dirt thrown on you and standing uncomfortably and things is it's hideous.
But how do you balance that with trying to maintain physical fitness? Because I imagine the stress of the career can be overwhelming sometimes.
I don't know,
people do it
in different ways. It's always much harder for women. There are so many more demands, I think, on female actors. But I think for a lot of us, particularly on Spartacus, the gym became it's kind of a switch off meditative thing. So most of us would, you finish the day and you're exhausted. You've been shooting, we did a 10 and 11 hour day, I think, but you've been there 14 hours or so. But you'd stop off at the gym on the way home just to unwind and let your brain switch out of the day. And so when you went home, you were actually tired rather than sort of meth freaked crazed, which you can be after a day on set. Not that we were having meth, by the way, you feel like that.
Yes. Now, according to the internet, which I do not always believe
the internet.
By the way, I love questions that start with according to the internet.
Yeah,
I just have to point that out.
That
you speak French.
I speak a little bit of French. I lived there for a little while.
Oh, okay. What was that like?
I adore it. Paris is one of my most favorite cities in the world. Over the years, I've spent time there in French Polynesia. And so I kind of have survival French. And when you are in a French-speaking place, it becomes a lot easier. I pick it up and I can sort of get around. But I speak slightly like a simple child, where past and future tense isn't so great. I tend to, I hungry now, would like go restaurant, please.
Well, were you familiar with that when you were filming Lord of the Rings already?
I had a bit of French. I did French.
Did that influence the way you did the Elvish language?
No, Elvish language is this crazy, crazy sort of Welsh, Celtic, strange mix. And it just confused me. But we had this wonderful woman, Rasheen, who was very patient. And she would, go over and over. And it was also strange, too, when we first started shooting, all the elves had a very, very strong accent. It was all like that, and we kind of had... It was very Welsh, and...
Okay.
Which just sounded really stupid. And and no one could really understand it. It was all, hello, and we go there, and it just sounded a bit sing-songy and strange. So... And most of the film is then you add the sound later on because there's so many extraneous noises in set. So pretty much all the dialogue has been redone.
So a lot of ADR.
Yeah, all ADR.
Okay.
So as the thing went on and we were completing the first film, they went, actually, we're going to do a much more British RP, received pronunciation kind of accent, which is great. It sounds much better, but when you speak like that, your lips don't really move.
Uh-huh,
so it's all kind of quite clipped and clear. Where the Welsh is all like that, and your lips and face is going all over the place. So we then had to stick kind of quite precise language into the mouth movements of this crazy Welsh thing. So there's some weird moments in face pulling.
It sounds almost like ADR for animation, almost.
Yeah, it was a little bit, but it's great, especially something that shoots over such a long period of time. It gives you a chance to consolidate performance and tweak bits that, maybe you didn't get right on the day or kind of match up, so...
Well, I know Peter Jackson is definitely a filmmaker who's known for a long process and a really, really evolutionary craft in the way that he does films. And of course, he's doing The Hobbit right now, but I'll let you in on a secret.
Oh,
while Bethany,
according to the internet.
This is not really a secret at all, but Bethany and I are actually most familiar with, of course, Lord of the Rings, as I'm sure many fans who've walked up to you this weekend, and we really enjoy these films. And I am curious about that filming process with both Fellowship and the Two Towers. And I really enjoyed the story you told about how you found out about the fate of your character on the panel.
Yeah, it's not chaotic in any way. There is such a clear vision that existed almost 10 years before the film started shooting. But there is that evolutionary process of because you're making a film, it has to kind of balance, and there are aspects that you change. And Philippa and Fran and Peter knew the books, you know, inside out. They lived and breathed them and read them for almost 10 years, you know, one back to back. So moments were changed as we were filming, or decisions were made. And one day we were in the sort of cafeteria lunchroom between takes, or yeah, lunchtime. Sorry, my brain's going. And Philippa Boyens came up and sat down. And she goes, "Oh, how's it going? Good, good, good." And we were chatting. And she said, "Now, Peter wants to kill you. What do you think about that?" And it was like, oh, have I done something terribly wrong? But it was about they wanted a moment to show the loss of elves who live forever and never expect to die. To build the idea of the elves sacrificing, and also what was at stake, that the changing of the age and a loss. And so they had a handy elf they could kill off. They couldn't kill Orlando because they needed him for the rest of the film and the teenagers. So I got the axe in the back. But for me, it was great. It got me to Helm's Deep, and I got to play with the Uruk-hai.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's it like on a set with so many creatures?
It's fantastic, but you feel... It's also great for actors that we can be slightly whingy. Can be slightly, "I'm tired, I'm hot." But when you're surrounded by a whole lot of people wearing thick rubber suits and boiling hot temperatures inside a studio, or being drenched in rain and having to do incredibly physical stunts, those guys are suffering so badly. And they're wearing false teeth and, you know, eye contacts that hurt, and plus having to do all these stunts. Basically, you shut the up and and you get on with the job. So... But it's amazing. There's so many people working on it and putting it all together to make the whole thing work. It's a wonderful experience to be part of.
That's really neat. Now, I was wondering, what would you think the differences are between filming a fantasy film like The Lord of the Rings, between a fantasy television show, or I guess kind of sci-fi as well, like The Legend of the Seeker, with your character Darkin Rahl?
Film, you know, films are beautiful, and there's the time and consideration to get things perfect, or as perfect as you can be. The thing I love about working on a series is you sit around much less. For Seeker and for Spartacus, most of the day I'd be in studio with the director and the actors and the crew, and we'd be working the whole day. With film, you can spend most of your day just sitting on a chair, waiting, drinking too much coffee. So I think I much prefer doing it, being up there and doing it. But ultimately, it's whatever you shoot, it's kind of the same process. There's a film and television has been refined to a point where around the world, it's kind of the same process. You just have a bit more money on some and a bit more time on others. Really. Money buys time, I think. That's the great job.
Yeah, the scale of the production of Lord of the Rings really, really shows that they were able to take their time, and it's certainly a great franchise, and we've really enjoyed it. But you've been very generous with your time. I do want to ask you one more question, especially as kind of a parting words. Would you mind sharing some insight into the industry for people who are interested, or any final thoughts about what it's like, and any advice for those who might be interested sometime down the rear,
I'm
down the road?
I'm always wary of giving advice, but I do find myself doing it, especially after a few wines. but a friend of mine, documentary maker, she was talking to a group of students, and the thing she said, which I think is absolutely true, is if there is anything else you can do, you know, be it you want to be a filmmaker or an actor or any kind of artist, really, if there is anything else you can do, go and do it. Because you should. It's very few people make a success out of it. And unless it's the only thing you can do, if you have no choice but to do this thing, it's your passion and your calling, then you stand a chance. But it's just a chance. I love it. I can't imagine having done anything else, but it is kind of a crazy... You have very little control in your life.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And it can ruin aspects that other people take for granted about having a life. But it's, again, if it's the thing that you absolutely love and the thing that you're passionate about, then then you must do it. You've got no choice, really. So
awesome. Well, our listeners can see you in upcoming projects. Now we've got Spartacus: War of the Damned. Any other projects?
I'm in the process of sort of hopping between countries. So
sure.
I've been on this fantastic holiday for the last few months, which I'm going to continue for 2 more months, and then get back to work. But War of the Damned will be amazing. It's the last series of Spartacus, and because it's the last, they've gone, right, each one has to be bigger and bloodier and sexier and better. So, and then the final one will be remarkable. So
we cannot wait.
Stay
and
tuned.
I'm sure we will. We will. Craig, thank you. You've been
My
really
pleasure.
Generous.
Thank you both.
Yes, Cheers. And thank you for your time. And we will let you get back into the exhibit hall, back into the chaos.
Back to the hell. Hi, I'm Craig Parker. I was Hal Deer once before they killed me. You're listening to the Star Wars Report on Middle Earth Network Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap on our special Lord of the Rings edition of the Star Wars Report's Dragon Con coverage. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this podcast episode, and a special thank you to the folks listening over on Middle Earth Network Radio for the Hobbit Day celebration. And may the hair ever grow on your feet. May the odds ever be in your favor. Wait, wrong franchise. And of course, most of all, may the Force be with you. Always.